Good morning. Today is Thursday, July the 12th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming.
Good morning, Brian.
How are you?
I'm good.
Why?
Why not?
Oh, okay. Didn't know if there was something really cool that had happened since we saw you last time or not, so why not
like
is a
that.
Fair
why?
Question. Yeah. Lots going on. All right. Why do they say that? Today it's alma mater. Why do we call the college which we attend our alma mater?
Our mother. Isn't that what that would mean, our mother? No, alma is, I know mater is mother, but I don't know, Brian. I should have gone with that.
You kind of got halfway close there, because this Latin phrase literally means nursing or nourishing mother.
Oh, okay.
Since colleges and other institutions of learning are supposed to nourish the minds of their students, the term is applied to them.
Nice.
Ooh, scary close.
50%, I don't
know.
Yeah,
well, you know, if you were a ball player.
That's true.
That's not bad.
I'd be happy.
Unless that's your fielding average.
That's right.
Then probably not so good. Oh, boy. Lots of arrests going on out in the drug fields,
yes.
Isn't there?
Yeah, and the volume is pretty frightening. I worked the DTF assignment, the Drug Task Force assignment, for over 4 years, a number of years ago, and we discussed the fact that back then, somebody took a couple ounces off of somebody, it was a big bust. Now it's pounds. It's pretty frightening.
Yeah. I don't know if it's just my memory playing tricks. 5,000 plants.
Yeah.
Doesn't sound like it's that big a deal. But I think maybe because I was a little jaundiced thinking, we've had some in the recent years of 20,000, 30,000, 50,000 plants. Okay, 5 sounds pretty pedestrian by comparison. But 3 or 4 different pops every day, and there's methods there, and. Is it a changing scene now?
It is, I think, really, and this has been our focus for some time, and I really put the marijuana unit with the basically the environmental crimes, fish and game crimes division together, because really that's the issue. The unpermitted grows are what we see as the most destructive crime to our environment. We have people draining creeks. We have people creating diversions. We have people putting in roads, knocking down trees. So it's really looking at it, and that is now how the penal code and the health and safety code address it. It's not a felony to cultivate marijuana unless you're doing it in violation of environmental codes.
If there's no permitting that has been taken out.
Right.
Does that change the status of it, or is that just kind of an ancillary? And if, let's say, for example, Fleming Papstein is growing, but we're doing it all by the numbers. Everything is dialed in. Everything's contained. Everything is as good as anybody could hope for. But we didn't take out the permit. Is that a concern? Because the permit isn't there, so
yes.
It's code enforcement.
Yeah.
Or is it the environmental degradation? So if somebody takes out a permit, but, you know, they're slopping all over the place. There's diesel spills. They've done this. They've done that. The creek has been drained. Which of those two is worse?
It depends. It's all sort of the varying degree. So you're right, though. It depends on what the situation is as far as who's going to handle that. Right now, the county is sending out notices to those who are either falling out of the permit process or those who they have inspected and determined have made mistakes in how they set up the grow, you know, have violations, and giving them the opportunity to come in compliance, because that is part of what we want. It's like with anything. If someone says, oh, I did it this way, and you say, well, that's wrong, you got to do it this way, you give them the opportunity to fix it. If they don't fix it, then they have to go in and remove the plants, and there will be violations. The flip side is those who are not in the permit process, who are environmentally damaging the area, that's within my caseload, and we're handling those different. Obviously, we're still in that situation where 1%, 10%, I don't know how much we're actually, you know, of the total problem seeing. I know that the sheriff has recently said, based on flyovers, they believe the numbers are going down.
Well, it seems that intuitively it seems that way, as we have less of the trimmigrants in the area.
Yes.
So something has changed.
Right.
To what extent?
Yes.
Yeah, that, I guess that's a $95 question, huh?
Right. Right. And
actually,
also,
that TV show never made it. What?
I think it was a little more than that.
Yeah, I think so, too.
You were at the dollar store yeah. recently. But that is, and that is sort of the continuum we're looking at. We're hoping that over time we see more people in compliance, permit grows, and fewer of the others, such that it is an issue we can address timely.
But the reports that we're hearing are larger amounts of meth.
Yes.
And the marijuana and the money and at these sites that were permitted. And at other locations, too. So is there a blending? Is the drug culture becoming... Not culture, that's not fair. The drug supply chain
so
becoming more mushed together?
And you just said at the permitted grows. I don't know that that's an issue that we're seeing increase, but historically, yes, we've always seen the blending. We've seen people coming from the Bay Area and elsewhere with quantities of heroin and methamphetamine to exchange for quantities of marijuana. That's always been one of our problems.
So it's kind of like the guy with the trench coat that opens it up and he's got all the watches. Opening up and here's all the drugs, take your pick kind of thing.
Yeah, except it's much more organized than that.
Well, one coat with this and one coat with that. But are you seeing less charging of drug-related activity?
No.
KINS, News and Information Time is 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, as you project out into the drug-related cases, it seems like it's just a different flavor rather than more or less. Do you think that that's sustainable? Or do you sense that some of the meth and the heroin might be running its course also over a couple of years to be either replaced by something else or maybe just less?
It's an excellent question. What we do know is that there's a correlation between the epidemic of opioids and then the use of heroin. At the point where a doctor figures out, I can't keep giving you this many of these pills, people turn to street drugs. So that is one of the areas that a lot of urban areas have seen now an incredible boom in the heroin problem. So I know Humboldt County and a number of other counties are trying to address sort of that substance abuse issue, trying to find ways to address that. And I would hope over time we see less heroin. Methamphetamine, it's an odd one. It's one we have seen the ebbs and flows throughout all of my time. I mean, literally every 5 or 6 years, if you're assigned to the drug unit, you say, geez, we're seeing a lot of cocaine now, we're not seeing any meth. And then 5 years later, it's the reverse. Same with heroin. So it's...
What about alcohol? Are we seeing
alcohol stays,
abuse? Or is that a constant, or is that kind of ebb and flow as well?
Alcohol, it's interesting, is fairly consistent. What we do know is that alcohol use with younger people went down. And so hopefully we're going to see that moving forward as a reduction. We still have far too many fatalities related to alcohol abuse. We have far too many drunk driving in our community. We have people who rack up 2 or 3 within a couple months. So we see that issue. What's interesting is that we do have a really high number of people who are classified drunk in public, and we see them nonstop. They can pick
same
up
players?
10, yes, they can pick up 10 or 15 in a month because it's just such a problem. And that is one of those chronic problems that if you talk to business owners, it's a very significant problem for them. You really can't have the two or three guys sitting out on your little front wall in front of your business and think.
Or like Bill Williams' dad's park in Old Town. You know, they've kind of taken over and just
customers
are there.
Don't want to walk in and
it's too easy to say no.
Right. And then it's also, you know, that there are a lot of the people who are going to sleep in the doorway during the night, which means then you have trash and other problems.
They're just the ongoing.
Yeah. So that's one issue where I think I talked about it last time. You and I talked about trying to find, we were saying, sort of in the old days, places where those people could go, not necessarily jail, and finding more of those centers with the idea being that hopefully over time they want to address the problem and then they can.
If booze is just kind of is, and that's set aside, are we seeing with the legalization people more driving under the influence?
Yes. So Colorado saw that explode. It's interesting. We've always had that problem here. The Department of Justice, the laboratories are getting better at testing because historically people would say, well, it stays in your system 30 days, so you can't prove that it was influencing this person's ability to drive at this particular time. They've really done a much better job, you know, with the science of trying to nail down how close in time. It's still a very difficult one to prove, was it impacting the person's ability such that they were impaired? But that is something that I know Colorado and Washington are trying to address because it is a problem.
I would think if you get in a crash and you've got drugs in your system, there's a corollary. Somehow that something was impacted. Now, whether or not it caused or it could have been avoided if it wasn't, that's for somebody else to figure out.
It's
if you're driving under the influence, it doesn't say smashed or blottoed.
Right.
It says influence.
But you have to be able, and it's the same with prescription drugs. At what level, you know, if someone takes a painkiller every day or whatever medication they're on, at what level in their blood, can you say that would have impaired them, that would have affected their response time, their ability to handle driving conditions?
Well, sleep deprivation does that too.
Exactly.
And that doesn't put anything into your system. So if you're driving sleepy, you get off because there's nothing in your system? Or do you use other things to determine that that person wasn't operating the vehicle safely? Why not use those same arguments?
And that's exactly the issue. So right now in the state of California, if you're driving a car and you kill another person because you violated the vehicle code, okay, you didn't yield, you didn't stop completely, whatever the situation is, it's a misdemeanor. If you do that same act, only you're impaired, we can charge you with a felony. So those are the two distinctions. So it's always been the problem. I always think we have this other, you know, sort of charge we can bring called a wet reckless, which means there was something in your system. We can't say per se you were driving under the influence, but you were driving while something was in your system. And we use that frequently in plea negotiations when we know we're so close to the line, we may not be able to prove it to a jury. I wish that was a charge that we could use sort of in other areas as well, more in other words, bring it as an actual charge rather than just a negotiating. It's not something we can charge someone with. It's something that we can use as a lesser, but I think that would be an important one to sort of consider because we have far too many people who are driving with substances in their system.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
Do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit DecadeOfDifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, American Ag Credit, and Lolita Cheese. Maggie, the cultural mores of the area have changed during the break. We were talking about drunk driving.
Yeah.
And it was a big ripping deal, and it was almost vigilante-esque. We didn't worry too much about the drugs. It was booze. Okay, things have changed. Now we're focusing on other areas. As those changes of focus occur in the community, do the rates of use fluctuate accordingly, or is it more like a zoo where we're on the outside looking in at that group going, oh, look at the and heroin. They shouldn't be using heroin. And then 5 years later, we're looking at the same, you know, through the same wall going, you know, LSD, that's really the thing we should be focused. And then 5 years later, it's another drug and another drug, but it's that same user group.
So I think one area that, you know, sort of we've always made that distinction is if you're a danger to others. So, for example, drunk drivers, we know what a horrific danger they are to others. It's so significant. I can't give you our numbers, you know, for all time. It's pretty consistent right now. I mean, I've been in office 3.5 years, looking over our numbers, it's pretty consistent. What has improved is the scientific information. So, and I think I mentioned this to you once before, when I first started prosecuting, you were presumed to be impaired at 0.12. Now it's 0.08. So that's a drop of 4%, you know, the blood alcohol level has dropped. And what that is literally the difference of a couple drinks. So we know at lower levels people are impaired such that they cannot safely operate a vehicle. So that has had an impact. The flip side is the use of drugs. We see it a lot in our community, but it's a lot of the chronic problem is not people that we see driving. What we do know, though, is that there are people who are using substances and then also driving. And how we need to look at trying to address that is more of the scientific data. We need to find out more about how it affects a person's ability to perceive and respond to very quick events, which is why driving a car when you're impaired is so dangerous.
Do the individuals themselves perceive? I'm thinking more the normal drugs, prescription drugs, things of that nature. No-dose, the allergy stuff that kind of gets you a little or can get you a little dingy if you have too much. Do the people using those that come where there's a case filed or developed? Do they perceive that they're operating or doing anything illegal, anything wrong?
No. And part of it is...
Are they?
Well, they are. If they cannot operate a vehicle safely, they are. And whether or not they think that, I mean, that's true for a lot of the drunk drivers. People say, oh, I always do this. It's just from the bar to my house. How bad can that be? And it's a constant sort of idea of they don't understand.
So it's a lack of recognition rather than a denial?
Yes. And then you do have the people who are in denial. We have people who pick up 2 or 3 or 4 DUIs and think nothing of it, and they have to understand. I mean, you look at our statistics. During the break, we were mentioning MAD, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving. We don't have an active group here anymore. It used to be that for drunk drivers, if they were willing to go sit with the MAD panel, they got a reduced fine, and it was a good reduction in fine. And the fines are pretty high for DUI. They're over $2,300. Because of that, because of if you sit down and you listen to what one moment in time, what that event, how it has altered somebody's life and forever. I mean, we do this, you know, part of the whole every 15 minutes that the high school program run. It's really trying to educate people on, think about this. You may not think that you're impaired, but if you make a mistake behind this huge machine and you take another person's life, everybody lives with that forever. You know, mothers never ever forget their child's birthday. It doesn't matter if they've been gone 30 years, it's with them. And that's what drunk drivers, I think, really need to hear. And what I think people who are using controlled substances, whatever it is, should also have to understand, because nobody wants to do that. And it happens in a split second.
Is an arrest for drunk driving a wake-up call for a majority of the people? I mean, is it one and done? Or does one become 48 for a lot of folks and they just don't see that there's that downside risk?
So there is no, you know, norm per se. I will say it's a younger person's, in, you know, the vast majority of it is sort of the 20 to 30 year old group. But we do have, and I'm always surprised, we do have people in their 40s and 50s who are driving drunk.
Oh, I thought you were going to do the mom thing. Who ought to know better.
They ought to know better. And then, unfortunately, we do have people who are the chronic drunk drivers. So if you pick up three in 10 years, your fourth one within 10 years is a felony.
So that's kind of like the legal standard of habitual.
If you have a driving under the influence causing injury, and then you pick up another one, that can be a felony. So there are different ways, but generally they're misdemeanors. And for some people, they treat it as, well, my insurance is going up, or, oh, I've lost my license for a few months. And unfortunately, a lot of them, like shoplifting. Yeah, they go on driving with a suspended license, knowing that if they get caught, that's a huge fine. So there are some people who never learn and never really appreciate the risk. And then, of course, there are the people who are alcoholics. So they always think that, you know, operating at that level is kind of where they're supposed to be, or where they don't think it's a problem for them, and they don't realize that it is, that it's affecting them. And then, obviously, it's affecting their ability to drive their car.
KINS News and Information Times, 8:42.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. Maggie, so with some of the changes that have gone on in our area in the drug arena, you know, legalization is one thing, blending is one thing, prescription drugs, the opioid thing, is there any way you can project? Or do you just say, you know, this thing's really fluid and it's always been fluid, it's going to continue to be fluid, and we know that there will be an issue, we just don't know what flavor it's going to be?
I don't know that you can project. I will say this. Studies have really shown that the sooner we address problems, whether it be in the family or for individuals, the better we are at helping them. And, you know, Humboldt County has, unfortunately, a very high ACEs rating, so that's Adverse Childhood Experiences scoring. And one area that we've talked about it and why I think the Child Abuse Services team is so critical is these are really horrific experiences for children. We have a mental health person there. We offer them services. We have a victim witness advocate. We have one prosecutor, one investigator that stays with them and helps them. And the idea is if we can help them survive and recognize, you know, this was something that was horrible that happened, but it's not who they are, and to sort of strengthen them through that, we can have an impact on their entire future life.
So would it make sense with drug use, if there's the in-house mentoring going on that's showing that drug use is okay, that's going to be a toughie.
Right.
But somewhere around junior high, isn't that when it kind of an individual opts either to begin or not to begin, you know, to succumb to the temptation, to put some of the resources at that level?
Yes. Yeah. And so
juvenile high and high school.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, that's a big part of like the child abuse services team. Our hope is to help them not have that sort of emotional hit that affects children such that in their early teens they turn to drugs or they turn to the streets. Same with juvenile offenders. A lot of studies are now trying to address what's the problem, what's the underlying issue. Let's get at that, you know, more programs so that hopefully we're not going to see them in adult court.
Yeah, less symptom or less causes resulting right. in less symptoms. Yeah.
So it's a lot of trying to recognize early on what are the issues. You know, is there a way to help with those issues? Right now, Department of Health and Human Services is trying to have more mental health in the schools, even in the outlying areas.
Godspeed.
Thanks, Rob.
See you everybody tomorrow.